This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
Paul Ellen began his broadcasting career in Haley Center on the Auburn University campus. He was part of a group that literally built WEGL nearly 50 years ago. He went on to call Auburn baseball and was part of a College World Series team that featured Joe Beckwith and Terry Leach. For 2 years, he called Auburn football and then returned to the Tigers broadcast booth in 1990. He began a stint of 30 years as the host for the Auburn football broadcasts. Last year, he joined me in Omaha, Nebraska for yet another Auburn baseball team playing in the College World Series. A man of many talents, Paul Ellen is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles.
Welcome into another Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. The man who is our guest today, he should be very familiar to Auburn fans. This is now 30 years for Paul to be a part of what is now the Auburn Sports Network crew. Also spent time as the play-by-play man for Auburn football, basketball, and baseball back in the day. Is getting ready for another season. Well, we're all getting ready. What we hope is for another season of Auburn athletics coming up. So, Paul, how are you these days?
Everything is good, Andy. I can't complain. It's been a much slower than desired summer, but I guess that's not the worst thing in the world. Other people have gone through much worse.
Paul, for those that are unaware, other than when they see or they hear you with Auburn athletics, can you give us a little bit of your background and what you have done with your career?
I haven't really figured that out, Andy. I think I'm on my third career now, so it's hard to figure that out. I went to Auburn intending to be a high school teacher, and the guy who lived across the hall from me in the dorm at Auburn was an engineer, electrical engineer named Dave Gamble, and he was helping put together a campus radio station, and he said, come on down and help us. You can drive nails. You can put some framing up. We put this campus radio station together. So I went down there and I never left, basically. And staff of WEGL, the Auburn campus station. Now, in fact, that would be 50 years ago next April 25th. We'll be having the 50-year anniversary of Weagle signing on the air. I wound up being a newscaster, eventually news director, but they had some issues with the sports department. And so I stepped in the next baseball season and said, you know, I'll listen to play-by-play. I'll give play-by-play a shot. And I wound up doing Auburn University baseball. And from there, that became kind of a weekend job as I finished college. I drifted away from education and into arts and sciences, or liberal arts as it's called now. Wound up going into public relations. And my first job was with university relations at Auburn. And from there, it's been back and forth between broadcast and media relations or public relations, sometimes simultaneously. And that's what it's been for the last 20 years.
Paul, where was the location for the first Weagle or WEGL? Where was that station located?
It was in Haley Center. They gave us a suite of offices. If I remember right, it was the 1200 block of Haley Center. And it was just a big open quadrant of Haley Center on the first floor, and we framed up offices and a studio, and somebody somehow got a budget together, and we got some equipment. And of course, Auburn has no shortage of engineers, so getting on the air wasn't a problem. But it worked to my advantage, and some of the rest of us. There were no real experienced radio people out of that original staff. It's amazing that we have had, from the original staff of maybe 10 people, we've had a 60 Minutes producer. We have had a Pulitzer-winning reporter on television in Chicago, Don Mosley. We've had Jimmy Carter, who has worked for radio and television stations around the country and worked for the Nashville Network and now teaches broadcasting at Belmont College in Nashville. Of course, I've had a checkered broadcast career myself. So out of the original 12, we had another who was a senior executive with one of the top ownership groups in broadcasting. So half of that original staff who knew nothing, literally nothing, wound up making a career in broadcasting and a pretty nice career.
Paul, where was home for you? Where did you grow up?
In the Southeast. I was born in Gadsden, Alabama. a lot of family still up there. Middle school in South Georgia, and then went to high school in Ocala, Florida. And Ocala is right in the middle of Central Florida. Back then, it was less a tourist destination and more thoroughbred horse center. So there were a lot of Auburn people there because Auburn had the only large animal veterinary school of any renown in the Southeast. Florida and Georgia eventually opened veterinary schools, but Auburn produced all the vets who worked on thoroughbred horses in the Southeast. So there was a large Auburn contingent there. And of course, I came from an Auburn family, so we fit right in there. There was never a doubt in my parents' mind where I would go to college. There might have been a doubt in my mind.
You came from an Auburn family, so you're a second generation or more of Auburn?
I was the first graduate of my immediate family from Auburn, but my father went to Auburn for a while before he had to go back and run the family store. So,
Paul, where did your radio career take you after your days at Weagle? Kind of give us that circuit, if you would, please.
Well, as with many in broadcasting, Andy, it's a mini stop circuit, although not as many stops as some. While I was doing Auburn baseball, the owner of one of the local stations, WAUD, heard me, and he actually offered me a paying job to do Auburn baseball and high school football. Well, that sounded pretty good to a college student who basically had what he could earn in the summer and nothing else. So I took that, and the rest of my college career, I worked at WAUD doing high school football in the fall and Auburn baseball in the spring. In the summers, I was very fortunate. I went back to Ocala, met up with a guy named Bill Early. And for some reason, Bill liked me. He was the program director of a rock and roll station in Ocala, Florida. And back in those days, you had these daytime only stations. Well, that meant they got to be on the air until 30 minutes after sunset. So in the summer, they had to have basically a full extra shift a day. So he hired me and put me on the air for that extra shift. So I was a long-haired rock and roll disc jockey in the summer and a sports camp in the fall and spring.
You also have some work in the movies, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Just slightly. After I graduated from Auburn, as I said, my first real job was with University Relations. And when they were shooting the film Norma Rae in Opelika with Sally Field, for which she won an Oscar, if I'm not mistaken, they needed some people who could hold a camera and look like a news reporter. So my associate, Jerry Ray, and I from University Relations got a couple of cameras, and we played reporters in climactic scenes in Norma Rae. In the television version, you don't see me. But in the full screen version, the 9x16 version, which is now on television, I actually get a close-up because one of the principals fainted during the big scene, and I helped her to her feet. So that's my claim to fame as far as the movies.
Where'd you meet your wife, Paul?
I met her at Auburn, actually. She was a volunteer at WEGL. I was at a fraternity dinner later the same week, and she was her dorm's nominee for little sister. So we met twice in the same week and wound up kind of hitting it off. I wouldn't say love at first sight, but we dated intermittently from there on and got married right after we graduated.
Where did your career take you after Ocala, Florida?
Well, after Ocala, I came back and graduated from Auburn. I went to work for University Relations. On the weekends, university employees didn't make a whole lot of money then. They may not now. They make more than they did then. I was still doing high school football. Well, I was very fortunate that the athletic director at the time, Lee Haley, had two sons who played for Auburn High School. And he didn't make the away games because, obviously, he had requirements on Friday nights of a football season. So he heard a lot of my broadcasts. There was a change in ownership of the Auburn network in 1979 in the spring. And they didn't have a play-by-play guy. It was a bit of a surprise that WAUD won the bid. I don't think anyone expected them to. And Coach Haley says, well, you better hire somebody that I can approve as your play-by-play guy. Hire this guy. I had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. I got a call and they said, would you like to be Auburn's play-by-play guy? And at the time I was doing high school football. I was the PA guy at Jordan Hare Stadium and I was doing college baseball. So I'd done a lot of sports, but never on that level. So I cut an audition tape and whoever Coach Haley's committee was approved me And I wound up being the play-by-play announcer from 1979 and 1980.
You and I have talked a lot about those days, and a mutual friend of ours was kind of a mentor to you at that time in Buddy Davidson, right?
Buddy was very much a mentor. Buddy and I would get together every Monday. He was more of a mentor than I wanted at times, because every Monday we'd get together and listen to the air check of the previous game. And Buddy was quite generous in pointing out every mistake that he felt I made. And it made me better. I appreciated it later, and I was very fortunate to have that. But Buddy was a great influence on my life.
Take us then from the time that you leave Auburn as the play-by-play man until you came back to Auburn in 1990 as the studio host.
I sound like a gypsy in this thing, Andy. I never really thought of it in that way. I had left University Relations when the Auburn Network job came along. When that contract expired after 2 years and they didn't get the bid back, ironically, one of my close friends, Jim Fife, my golfing buddy, his company got it. That was not a surprise, but Jim and I had been friends long before either one of us were doing that and remained friends for the rest of his life. I went on and moved to Atlanta, joined up with a marketing firm known as Cone & Wolf. I was very fortunate, the largest sports marketing firm in the Southeast. Did a lot of Olympic business, a lot of business with the PGA Tour and the NFL. I worked there for 13 years, and I got to engage in a lot of fun activities, kind of worked my way up the ranks. I started a little more mature than their normal incoming person, so I kind of moved up fairly fast there. In the spring of 1990, I guess you and I were brought back at the same time as the utility man. So every time that I've got one of those pictures.
We were the Swiss Army knives, weren't we?
We came in. So every now and then there's some pictures circulating around of you and me and Jim Fife and Charlie Trotman and Quentin Riggins, who also came later that same year. So you and Quentin and I all go back to that 1990 season.
That starts 30 years for you now of being a major part of broadcasts with regard to Auburn University athletics.
You know, the first thought was, do I really want to do this? Because I love Auburn. Like any Auburn person does, I love it. I'm a season ticket holder since 1976. The last time I sat in my own seats was 1989, the Iron Bowl. But my wife enjoys them, and so does other family members. But, you know, I kind of wondered, I was moving up in the marketing agency ranks. I was hosting weekend sports talk on a 50,000 watt clear channel station. So I went to my boss and talked it over. And he said, hey, he's a big college football guy anyway, although not an Auburn fan. He says, hey, I'll support you. You want to do this on Saturdays? We'll make it work. I already knew Jim and Charlie, met you. And I think we had known each other a little bit in passing through the years. You came in right behind me at another station that I worked at briefly, so we knew each other, and it just felt right. It was a chance to get back involved, and my wife was fully in favor of it because, she was riding down every week and going to the games anyway, so she was fully in favor of that. So it worked out well, and initial qualms were overcome by the people involved more than anything else.
You know, for me, Paul, that was a big step in my career to be a part of that and become the locker room host and continue to do women's basketball. Then that led into baseball with Rod about 5 years later and now into what I'm doing. So for me, it was a huge step as far as a career. There was no second guessing for me. I knew that I wanted to do that. And, you know, When Rod passed away a year ago in May, I've talked so much about the camaraderie that goes into that. And you and I have spent a lot of time together at home, on the road, a lot of Friday night meals before football games, a lot of long drives back after some of these football games and that type of thing. You really get to know a lot of people. You certainly know their talent, but you get to know the people as well. And to me, that has become just as important as the work itself, the camaraderie and the friendships that develop over a long period of time.
I absolutely would agree. And when I think back on these 30 years, you know, you remember the highlights of the games. There were big games, and it was fun to be a part of that and to be associated with it and to be associated with the Auburn family. But when I think back, I remember as much as like that pregame show that we did the night before in Scottsdale, before that national championship game. But I also remember like long drives through Central Texas with you and Stan, and after the game, sitting around with the crew, just waiting for things to clear out after a big game in certain road stadiums. You remember that after SEC championship games. You really think of the Friday night dinners before road games are as much a highlight of your life or in my life as I can think of. Those are the things that really pop into your mind, you know?
Absolutely. No question about that. All right, let's talk about some of the games, some of the teams in your 30 years currently with the Auburn Sports Network crew. You've been a part now of broadcast crews that called three undefeated teams at Auburn, 1993, 2004, and 2010. You've been a part of SEC championship games. You've been a part of two national championship games, including one that capped off a national championship season. We have seen some remarkable wins in Auburn history, and we've been a part of some gut-wrenching losses for this team. So from a games perspective or a season perspective, Paul, when you look back on it now, what stands out to you the most?
Well, when you think back, 2010 is the one that just jumps out immediately. And the reason is 2010, don't take this wrong, 2010, they won every game, you know. But that was not the best Auburn team I don't think we saw. Certainly we saw some of Coach Dye's teams in the 80s that were probably better top to bottom. I'm not sure 93 and 94 weren't better, but that team, number one, they had the best offensive player in the country, the best defensive player in the country. So at any time on any play, offense or defense, something big could happen. And you had those guys who also made their biggest plays in the fourth quarter. That team had a lot of close games. I don't think people realize how close the South Carolina and the Clemson and the Kentucky and the Alabama game all were. All of those could have tipped in the balance, and a couple of them on the road probably should have tipped the other way. But that team made plays. So you think about the ups and the ups of that season. You know, there were just highlights after highlights, weekly highlights. So that one jumps out at you first. Some particular games, Northwestern. You know, same general area in Central Florida. The Penn State game in 02 was a blast for a different reason, because that team, you know, they weren't supposed to do that. Darnell, I think, was injured, and Ronnie Brown came in and goes for almost 200 yards, despite the fact that the All-American running back played for the other team and didn't hit 100. So that one jumps out at you. But in 04, obviously, LSU jumps out at you as much as anything else, and then Georgia. The Georgia game in 04 might be the best game an Auburn team that I have seen ever played.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama.
You talked about moments. And after the win over Oregon in the desert, Patrick Tisdale, who was our engineer, and Brad Law, our producer, and still our producer, and they're both in those same roles now. I felt bad for them because they were in the booth after the broadcast was over, packing up the equipment. And the rest of us had found this big round table just behind our booth in the hallway behind the booth. And we were just sitting around this table and looking at each other. And I couldn't believe that it had actually happened. And I hadn't been around Auburn as long as some of the rest of you guys. You had been around Auburn for quite some time. Stan had played at Auburn and had been a part of that 93 undefeated team. And finally, this team got a chance, this school got a chance to play for a national championship and had won it. And I think we were all looking at each other. Rod was the same way. We can't believe that this has finally occurred after all these years and all the slights against Auburn football. I will never forget that moment and the looks on everybody's face as we sat around that table after that broadcast was over.
When I said special moments off the field, that's one of the ones that really came to mind. We were like seventh graders. I mean, it just like really happened, you know?
Paul, you and I talked a lot last June after Rod had passed away. Of course, Paul stepped in. He was the play-by-play voice for Auburn baseball in the regional at Georgia Tech, called that dramatic Stephen Williams home run on Saturday to win the Georgia Tech game. And then Paul joined me for the rest of the ride, North Carolina, and then on to Omaha with that magical ride for Butch Thompson's team. But that wasn't your first World Series calling baseball for Auburn, was it?
Nope. You go back to, as I mentioned earlier, my early broadcast experience. I was very fortunate in 1976 to be calling the games. And that team got on a ride as well. They had five pitchers who pitched all but 40 innings the whole season, stayed healthy. Same five guys pitched over 400 innings, I think it was, by five guys. And took them all the way to Omaha. Joe Beckwith was the anchor, but Robert Hudson, they had Terry Leach, who was the third starter, in some cases the fourth starter, who wound up having the most successful major league career. And then Mark McClanahan. Those five guys pitched all the innings, stayed healthy all year. They had enough offense to get there. And that was a great experience. It's a much different Omaha back in 76 than it was this year.
And a different way to get there, too, as far as the regional was concerned, wasn't it?
Well, of course, Auburn played their traditional regional down in Tallahassee then. basically, home away from home. But in that particular regional, things went very well. We had Joe Beckwith was the ace. He pitched the first game. Auburn won close. Then it rained for 2 days. And then Robert Hudson came in and pitched. And they won the second game. And then it rained another day. So by the time you got to the regional final, basically Auburn is coming out of the winner's bracket. And they've got all five pitchers rested to win that one against a great Florida State offensive team on their home field. And back then, there was no super regional. If you got in the Sweet 16 and won your first round, you were going to Omaha.
One of two Auburn teams that have come out of Tallahassee in a regional. That 76 and then 97 with the David Ross home run and Tim Hudson in that group.
I think Auburn's played as many postseason games in Tallahassee as they have in Auburn, probably.
More, I think.
Yeah.
Last year, here's a little bit of a story that Paul and I are part of. During the Auburn-Louisville baseball game at the World Series last year, you'll recall that was a game that started and stopped because of rain and then was picked up the next day. Well, we're in the Midwest, and Kirk Sampson was a part of this trip, and Kirk is from Iowa, and I'm originally from Illinois, and he and I both know of the outstanding breaded pork tenderloin sandwich that you could get in the Midwest. And he found a place in Iowa. Remember, we're in Omaha, Nebraska. But he found a place in Iowa that had these magnificent, gigantic breaded pork tenderloin sandwiches. And so when the game is halted, we get an Uber and a group of us, eight or nine of us, I guess, drive to Iowa for lunch and come back. And not long after we get back, they completely postpone the game and move it to the next day. So I can safely say that for the first time in my career, not only did I leave the game site in the middle of a game, I left the state in the middle of a game to have lunch and then come back the next day to complete that game.
Yeah, that was a first for me as well. So it was well worth it.
Paul, as you look back, of course, a couple members of our crew that we've worked with in the 30 years are no longer with us. Jim Fife, who passed away in 2003, and then Rod, along with his wife, Paula, who passed away in May of last year. Both of these men, you and I have known well, we have worked with, we were friends, are friends with both of these gentlemen. They're both legends in Auburn, and not just because of the teams that they called, and they were both part of great eras of Auburn athletics, because of the men that they were and the friends that they made. So I would be interested just to know your thoughts and memories of working and being friends with both Jim Fife and Rod Bramblett.
Well, Jim and I go really way back. When I was doing Auburn High School football, Jim was doing play-by-play for youth football on Saturday mornings on Channel 20 in Montgomery. And he would cover the big high school games around, or he would be a stringer, basically, for one of the local television stations on Friday nights. And then he worked at WLWI, a big station there, as sports director. But we had run into each other and got to be pretty good friends around the high school circuit. When I started doing the booth announcing at Jordan-Hare Stadium, Jim would come down and sit in the booth with me, and we got to be better friends. He would kind of be an impromptu spotter because the real reason was back then Jim smoked, and they wouldn't let him smoke up with the writers. So he would come down and sit in my booth and smoke. And eventually I got him to quit smoking, but he still came down and sat with me most of those 3 years. So we knew each other going way, way back. And that was another thing coming back in 1990. When you've been someplace and left in under whatever circumstances, you don't normally go back. But in that particular situation, it was met with open arms. And Jim and I had stayed close through the years. I'll remember, you know, we played golf many times each summer. We played at Maxwell Air Force Base, the prison there, had a great golf course. And I'd drive over and we'd play there. We watched the women's Final Four. I guess you called, right?
I called two of the three. Barry McKnight called the first.
Yeah, we were watching them from Jim's house after a morning round of golf in Montgomery, so I'll never forget that. So Jim and I were very, very close, obviously, for many, many years. Got to know Rod. I knew of him when he was doing baseball after I had moved to the Atlanta area. But he was my booth producer, my studio producer, for the Auburn football games for 1 year. And we had a blast. And we got to be really good friends then. And then we stayed pretty good friends. And I started working some baseball games with he and you on the weekends when circumstances dictated that one or the other of you had to miss. So that's where Rod and I started to get closer and closer. And, of course, both those relationships lasted until they passed away. They were both great, great men in addition to being great broadcasters.
You've worked with a lot of people on the crew. Currently now you do some hosting duties with both Jason Campbell and Ronnie Brown. Pre-game, halftime, and post-game. It started with Charlie Trotman and then moved. Of course, Quentin Riggins, as you mentioned, became a part of our crew late that first year back in 1990. Then Stan, who's celebrating 20 years this year, after he moved out of the TV booth with me, moved into the radio booth. We've had different folks from producers, John Cole and Brad Law and Jesse Duvall that have all worked with this. And listen, we've all gotten along. We've all been friends. It's been great to work with these people. And that's not always the case. But boy, haven't we been fortunate to work with the folks that we've been able to work with over these years.
Yeah, you look at some of our colleagues around the SEC and around the country, and you see these guys that don't even speak. You can't get along when they're not in the booth and they just have to fake it all the time. And you think back, I mean, we haven't had an uncontrollable ego in our group. And if we did, I think the group would take care of it. Over 30 years, it's been genuine close friends pretty quickly among everyone who's there. I mean, you remember a few years ago when the Swamp People was big on television. We'd have our Thursday night texts on Swamp that Quentin Riggins would lead. Just things like that that keep you connected. And this group has always been so connected, even as some of the characters have changed.
One more person, and I apologize for failing to mention, Sam Brumbolo was our producer for a number of years, and he passed away from cancer and was a unique individual, unique talent, but I didn't want to leave Sam out of talking with about Jim and Rod as well. All right, Paul, as you look forward now to this, and listen, at this point, as you and I talk, We're hoping that there will be an Auburn football season that will start on the 26th of September at home against Kentucky. We don't know what this season is going to look like, what these stadiums are going to look like, what our broadcasts even are going to look and are going to sound like at this point. It's an odd time to think 30 years down the road, and we're now dealing with something like this as we get ready for the 2020 season.
Yeah, you go back 1979, we worked in a plywood booth because they were building the upper deck on the west side of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Well, this year, it may either be a plywood booth. We're not sure exactly what we're going to be working from or where we're going to be working from. It could be a setup like this. A lot of thoughts about that and about where Auburn's come facility-wise. And you look ahead and how we might deal with this. Normally, at this time of year, we'd all be gathering someplace for a nice dinner, an evening meeting, and maybe a morning round of golf the next day and have our annual team building thing. Right now, I think it's shelter at home. For the most part, we get together occasionally, and we've had one get together this summer but you had to socially distance. It's just a very different world we live in, and it's going to be interesting. There are going to be some trials, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens this fall as we start to put this thing together, and things are going to start happening pretty fast.
Paul, as you look back, and I mean, you've been an Auburn student, now an Auburn graduate. You've called games for Auburn in the 70s, the 90s, the 2000s, 2010s, and now about to embark on the 2020 decade. I ask this of a lot of Auburn athletes that have moved on after their careers. And I want to ask you as well, because although you're not an Auburn athlete, you've covered these men and women, and you are an Auburn grad. Your wife, Pam, is an Auburn grad as well. So what has Auburn meant? And what does Auburn University, not just athletics, but what does Auburn mean to Paul and Pam Ellen?
I'll tell you, I know it sounds cliche, and people who are outside don't understand it when we say the Auburn family is different. But I think some people have come to realize it. Like a friend of mine who went to Auburn with me, his brother went to Florida. And he told me last year, we spent time with him when we were down there to play Florida, and he said, you know, you Auburn guys really are different. I think there is and I know maybe when you came along, it was a stop in the road on your career, and it wound up being your career. And I'm sure you felt it the same. Once you're there, once you're immersed, it's a little bit different. Now, we may fight like cats and dogs with each other, but it truly is a family, because if someone outside the family attacks one of us, we're gonna defend that family honor. It's something special. It goes way beyond sports. It goes way beyond, you know, just a cursory place to go or a diploma on the wall. There's a sense you can go somewhere. You know, 5 years ago I was in Scotland, and my bags are coming out of the Edinburgh baggage check, you know, the little carousel that goes around, and there's an Auburn golf tag on my suitcase. And the guy next to me says, War Eagle. And I look at him, and I was stunned, you know, but you get that all the time. And I've been fortunate to travel around a good bit over the last 35 or 40 years. You're always family if you run into another Auburn person. It's just that way, wherever you are.
Paul, I'm thrilled that I've been able to work with you now for the 30 years that we've worked together, and I'm even more thrilled that I can call you a friend and get to spend time together with you on a Saturday or weekend. I wish you nothing but the best for you and for Pam, and I look forward to whatever this 2020 football and athletic season looks like as we get ready for it.
All the best to you and Jan. It is always a treat to be with you, Andy.
War Eagle, Paul.
War Eagle.
Cole Kublik was a center on the Auburn football team, then joined me on pay-per-view and tape delay broadcasts for the Tigers. He's now part of the top crew on the SEC Network that features Tom Hart and Jordan Rogers. Cole Kublik is next. For Paul Ellen and the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.